John, and I'm an alcoholic. I want you to understand that this is a memorial service of a dear friend that we have lost. And I know all of you are great friends of Bill Roop. And tonight what we're going to do is we're going to have some people come up and say a few words. And I want to let you know how this is going to work. When you come up, when you're called up to the podium, you got 5 minutes. I'm going to be sitting in that chair. And I know how alcoholics are. You know, they fall in love with the sound of their own voice. And if you start to run out of time, you're going to see that guy stand up and start walking over towards you. And you'll know what's going on. I'd like to open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to know the thing that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. Now, our first speaker to come up tonight is a dear friend of mine. And I would like, I'm going to be using last names in case anybody gets offended. His name is John Lenz, and I'd like to invite him up here now.
My name is John Lenz, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'll try to be brief because I don't want the old man over here messing with me. I met Bill in February of 85. I had grown up here in Atlanta and moved to California and got sober in California. And when I moved back, my sponsor told me that what I was to do was to go to 90 meetings in 90 days and to get a sponsor as soon as I could. And so I started going to my 90 meetings in 90 days. And I think it was at the third meeting I went to New Hope over in Marietta. And there was Bill holding forth. And he was just part of the group. You know, that's the beauty of Bill. He was very flamboyant, but he was also sometimes just one of the folks, you know. And he was there for his own recovery. And that was one of the things that really impressed me. He had a lot of time, but he was also serious about his sobriety. And so we started working together. And I started doing my steps again with him, and we got to know each other really well. And, you know, that's one of the greatest blessings that I have in this program, is that with my sponsor, who John is my sponsor now, and with the people I sponsor, we work steps because that's how we get to know each other. And I got to know Bill pretty well. And what Bill did for me is he absolutely plugged me in everywhere that he went. You know, Bill was a guy, as most of you know, that knows everybody, just about. And if there's an event going on, he's going to show up because he likes to party. And, you know, he shows up and has a good time. And so he introduced me to the Blue Ridge Retreat up in North Carolina, where I met a lot of other people like Dave C. and some of the other folks. Maybe some of you know him. He introduced me to his retreat at Ignatius House. He introduced me to Rock Eagle. And I'm not sure I appreciated that, because there were 8 guys in a room snoring. You know, it was a place that only the really serious alcoholics that were looking for recovery went, because you didn't sleep. Although I got a lot of recovery out of that. And he introduced me to the Atlanta Roundup and other places. He suggested I go to the International. Now, I didn't go with him that year, but I ended up able to go. And when I got back, I went to the Roundup, and that's where I met my lovely wife. Now, she was dating someone else at the time, so I had to wait around till she kicked him to the curb before I could move in, right? But you know, Bill was always there. I could always count on Bill being there when I called. If I needed to get together, he'd make time. He always made time. And, you know, Bill was a guy that, as most of you know, didn't always have a filter. You know, he said what he thought. And sometimes, you know, he wasn't quite as gentle as I thought he should be with me. But at the end of the day, everything that he told me is what I needed to hear. And that's kind of how Bill was. He shared his sobriety with me. He shared his faith with me. And after a period of time, I moved to the other side of town, and I wasn't going to meetings where he was anymore. So I ended up getting another sponsor, but we always stayed in touch. You know, we'd get together and have lunch from time to time. He also introduced me to the men's meeting. At the time, it was over at the cafeteria on North Druid Hills. It had moved over there, I think, previously. And so he kept me in, plugged in to the men's luncheon at Christmas time also. But I have a story that I'm going to tell, and then I got to get down because I don't want him coming after me. We went to see Bill at his house just before he went towards hospice. And I hesitate to tell you this, so the squeamish of you probably need to close your ears. But Bill was receiving people on the porcelain throne for a while there. You know, he couldn't leave the bathroom for a period of time there. And so if you wanted to see Bill, you would see him kind of in all his glory sitting on the toilet. And so we came to visit, and I yelled out, "Bill, are you here?" And from way in the back, you could hear, "Yeah, come on back." And he was sitting there on the toilet, had a towel over him. He'd sit there for hours. He had the phone next to him. He was talking to people. And, you know, he was making cracks the whole time, you know. And my wife and I went in there, and we're talking to him and sharing back and forth. And, you know, he's making wise cracks. And then he said, "I want to pray for you guys." So he pulls his hands out from under the towel and says, "Give me your hands." That's Bill. He grabs our hands and says one of the most eloquent prayers I've ever had, said for me and for my wife. He did not pray for himself. He prayed for us. And, you know, I've never, ever had the experience of having someone sit on a toilet and pray for me. I will never forget that, and I'm eternally grateful to have had Bill in my life. He's been a tremendous blessing and inspiration for me, and especially in the last 10 years and watching what he went through with Jan and in the final days. You know, he shows us how it's done. He shows us how this thing, how you live this program, and I'm really grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you for that eloquent message, Sean. Our next chair is Carol James.
I'm Carol, and I'm an alcoholic. And I could stand up and say volumes about Bill and the funny stories, and it wouldn't be enough. Or I could say six words, and it could be enough. I met Bill when I came into the Sunday Night Home Group when I first came in the program in 1978. And my sponsor took me there. And the Sunday Night Home Group, Bill ran that for years. We went to do it. It's sort of like a floating crap game. We'd move houses from house to house. Whoever paid the rent, you know. But Bill was always there. You'd have to call Bill to find out where the meeting was. And that's where I first ran into Bill. And he would... I would hear these pearls of wisdom. However, I didn't think it was pearls of wisdom. I thought it was pearls of something else. Because basically I was new and I didn't want to hear it. But I've learned so much from Bill. I remember one of the first things I really one-on-one with Bill at the old Triangle Club. I was driving down Peachtree one day and stopped at a light and I heard this honk, 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 honk. And I thought, looked on and I thought, who is this old fart over there farting with me. And I thought, well, you better look at him. It was Bill. Roll down the window. Go to a meeting at Triangle. Well, I would not do what Bill told me to do. So I pull into Triangle, and we went to lunch. A group of us went to lunch at the Morrison's Cafeteria. And that was the beginning of my learning about to love Bill Root. In these past few months that Bill has been sick, I've spent time with him. I'd call him and say, Bill, what do you want to eat? And we were all trying to get Bill to eat and to prolong his life, which he didn't want. But he told me one day, he said, God called me last night. So I was up the next week and I said, I thought God called you, Bill. I think he called Jill, not Bill, and you're still here. And he laughed, and to quote everybody today, you're my favorite. Bill taught me a lot about unconditional love. And his line was, do you love somebody? You love them warts and all. And that's one of the many, many blessings. And I get emotional because this has been hard for me to lose him. I've known Bill for almost 35 years. Last year, I started going to Knott's Landing, a group that Bill went to on Mondays. And I talked to him on Sunday. I said, my 34th birthday is tomorrow. Come up, I'll give you a chip. So I went up that Monday, and he gave me a chip. And he said, I've got to give you my 35-year chip because I couldn't find my 34-year chip. I said, does that mean next year I'll get your 36-year chip for my 35th year? I have that chip with me. It never leaves my possession. And he gave me the chip, and I said, Bill and I have been friends for 34 years. And the message here, this is a lot longer than marriages last. Some marriages last. And the message here is to stay friends and don't get married. So therefore, Bill and I have remained friends for my 34 years. We didn't get married. But I've learned a lot, and I am so grateful to God that I have had the opportunity to be in this program and to get sober in this program and to share a portion of Bill's life and all the wonderful people. I saw so many people today that he touched. And we've lost a dear, good friend, and it hurts. But it goes on. The legacy goes on. People carry the message, and that's what we need to do. We need to pass it off and hope that we can continue Bill's tradition of unconditional love. Thank you.
Okay, Mary.
Hi, I'm Mary. I'm an alcoholic. I met Bill in 2002 at his retreats that he had twice a year. And that retreat saved my life. And every time I called Bill with a problem, he would always just say, you have to love him, Mary. And I can still hear that voice. And one year I got the privilege to do one of the talks. And then the next year, Gary did a talk. And I have Gary's permission to tell this. And we always did in the summer the Pearls of the Big Book. And everybody would do chapter 5. But every year they did chapter 5, no one would talk about sex. So Gary did his talk about sex, and he didn't talk about the fifth chapter, and didn't talk about sex. And I said to Bill, I said, what's wrong? I said, nobody talks about sex. Why didn't Gary talk about sex? He says, because he doesn't know anything about it. So I had to corner Gary and ask him why he didn't talk about sex. And he said, because I don't know anything about it. But, you know, Bill brought so much laughter. And that was the first thing that ever attracted me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I loved him dearly, and I'm going to miss him. Thanks.
I'm just going to interrupt the speakers for a minute that were sharing with you. I need to throw in just a little story of my own with Bill. I met Bill in 1971 when I moved here to Atlanta from Wisconsin. And he said, I think you and I ought to go to a meeting together. I said, okay. I said, I'll come and pick you up. He said, okay. And I went over and picked him up, and we were going to a meeting down on Spring Street, downtown. And as you know, it used to be a one, I don't know if it still is, a one-way street. And I drove down, and it was somebody was pulling out of a parking space, and I had a big Buick at that time. And I thought, well, I'll pull down there, and I'll back into the parking lot, in the parking space. And as I pulled up to back into the parking space, somebody came down and zipped right in there with this little car. And Bill looked at me, very spiritual Bill, and I said, that's son of a... And I got out of the car. And I walked back to the car, and I told the guy that pulled into my parking space what he needed to do. And he gave me one of those. And I want you to understand, that's a long time ago, folks. And I jumped up on the hood of his car. And I raised my foot up to smash his windshield. And Bill got out of the car and said, no, John. About that time, I looked back at the guy in the car, and his eyes were about this big around. He pulled up a little bit, and he backed up, and I could see his headlights as they were backing up the street to give me the parking space. And I got back in the car, and Bill said, remind me not to screw with you. And that's my story about Bill. And I'm sticking with it. And I'd also like to ask my good friend Dick Anderson to come up.
Thank you, John. My name is Dick Anderson. I'm an alcoholic. And I have been blessed with great sponsorship since I've been here. I believe if you're going to the doctor, you should find the best doctor. You can survive a bad home group because you can move, but you can't survive a bad sponsor. And ironically, I've had four sponsors in my life since I moved here in 1980. I've had Bill and John. Before that, I had a guy named Jack Sullivan, who was also a great sponsor. And a guy that was kind of my co-sponsor was a guy named Sonny Whittle. And I actually lived with him. He was 4 years sober, more than me, and went every place with him. And I'm going to his memorial service Monday. So they both passed this last week. But the great thing about it is I carry part of all four of those guys with me in everything that I do. And if I didn't, and especially in the last since I've moved here, I would not be sober, and I certainly wouldn't be married, or at least married to the same person for the last 29 years, if it weren't for Bill and John. I met Bill actually downstairs, and this would have been 36 years ago. This used to be a place where you could come for breakfast and lunch, and they had a hot plate down there. And everybody that was down there was dressed like we're dressed for this. They were dressed every day wearing a coat and tie. And there was a group of men down there, and it was Clarence Roberts and Joe Phelan, and Joe Hubbard brought me over here, and it was all the... And they looked at you with kind of this inspection look and checking you out and stuff. And the only one that didn't do that was part of that group was Bill Ruth. And he was fun. He had a great sense of humor. He always laughed at himself. And that was really what attracted me. The ability to laugh at myself has saved me on many occasions from doing something, because I've done a lot of stupid stuff, and if you really take yourself seriously, you're either going to drink or shoot yourself. And so I got to know Bill that way, and he became my sponsor in 1980 when I moved here. And I cannot tell you all the times I would come into him with some serious situation, and he would say something disarming that was funny. I remember I was 10 years sober. I went to him and I said, I cannot believe that I'm this screwed up after 10 years in AA. And for those of you who've got 5 years and think you're going to be well when it's 10. So Bill had exactly 20 years more than me. So Bill said, he proceeded to tell me how messed up he was at 30 years, which was true. And somehow I felt better. We both left, and, you know, he stayed sober and I stayed sober. In fact, when Carolyn was talking, I remember when I had my 34th AA birthday, Bill got, I guess he looked at the four wrong, and he sent me both a card that said happy 39th AA birthday, and he called me and wished me happy 39th. Now, this leaves you with one of those situational ethics things. Do I take the easy five? I thought about it for a while. I did tell him. I'll tell you how influential he was. When I chaired the Atlanta Roundup at its 25th anniversary, it was probably 15, 18 years ago now, we had a full house. Here's how you get a full house. We sold tickets, and I called John Holmes and Bill Roop, and between the two of them, they accounted for about 800 pre-sold tickets, which is more about as many people that come to the whole Atlanta Roundup now. But he would influence people, Bill and John both, but Bill would influence people, and 35 years ago, Leroy, I don't know if anybody knows Leroy, Leroy and I were wearing coats and ties in the parking lot at the Atlanta Roundup to help you find a parking spot. He explained to us that we could, if we were representing AA, even if it was parking cars, we needed to wear a coat and ties. So we were out in the parking lot wearing coat and ties 35 years ago. Even after, and he went through that very difficult time with Jan, and for those of you who don't know, his wife had Alzheimer's, and they came to my 25th AA birthday. I know John and Bill both spoke, and John said some nice things about me. Roop got up and said, I've known Anderson for 25 years, hadn't changed my life. And so, but what he did that day, and the big book says, our own behavior will show them more than our words. And that's the way it was with Bill. Bill that day changed Jan's diaper, I think, twice while he was at the house. And he told a story about how when he was 17 years sober, he was thinking about getting rid of his wife so that he could have a relationship with someone else. And but if he had done that, he would have missed the real meaning of love, to be useful to somebody, and that how important it was for him to be able to love his wife at that point. And seeing that, you know, because Barbara and I argue now and then. We don't have one of those relationships where we never argue. Seeing that and seeing him stay and do that with Jan, or seeing Bill with Mary Emma, that's what's helped us stay. Watching the other people in this program is, I think, what makes more difference than anybody else. We were having dinner with Bill shortly after Jan passed, and I was concerned about his mental health because we were over at a little restaurant, and Gary was there too, Gary and Mary. And in fact, you all had just gotten married, I think. And so he said, well, I just want you to know that Jan and I really appreciate you coming over here and have dinner with us. Well, Jan had just passed about 3 weeks before that. And I just looked at him, Barbara looked at him, and Gary says, he's not kidding, she's in an urn out in the car. So if you've got somebody like that helping you stay sober, how can you go wrong?
You know, this is amazing. You know, you lay down a few ground rules to alcoholics, and they usually say, screw you. And so far, everybody's been wonderful. Some have been more wonderful than others.
My time goes to Gary.
Yeah, right, okay. John Thomas, one of my good pals. Thank you. 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm John Thomas. I'm an alcoholic. I've known this guy since I came into the same group he was in 37 years ago over in Tucker. And he hadn't changed a bit, by the way. He'll ambush you with these kind of things. But it's an honor. It's an honor. And thanks for all those who have already shared about this wonderful man. I admired, respected, and honored and looked up to this man as much as any man I've ever met in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've met some good ones. I was not part of the inner circle. I was never sponsored by Bill. I didn't get to know Bill real well until we both ended up about 10 or 12 years ago as regular members of the NABA 11 o'clock Bridge Builders group. During that, I had known who Bill was ever since I came in. And I became aware of him early before I ever met him or knew about him. Bill was the kind of guy that people in AA were aware of. They knew about him if they didn't know him, and they knew that there was something special there. Time, a lot of time, is very impressive in AA, especially 50-plus years, or at the time I came in, Bill had 19 years. But it takes more than time in a person's character and presence in AA for them to stand out the way Bill Roop did. And I did become very friendly and close with Bill in the context of the Bridge Builders group here. And I sought his one-on-one counsel on several occasions with issues that were going on with me that were important to me. And he freely shared with me his experience in the same issues. And let me tell you, Bill walked a lot of the same paths that I and all the rest of us have walked. But he was a recovering alcoholic, willing to share his own experience, strength, and hope in such a way that it would just encourage a guy along and make him want to do things that he hadn't wanted to do before. There's one aspect about Bill that stands out to me that I would like to share from my own experience with him. Most of you would be familiar with this. Bill Roop was a man of deep faith in God. And you might not be aware of how deep that was until you got to know him a little bit better, or maybe spent some one-on-one time with you. I've heard so many good stories at his funeral today and in this service about the way he would pray with folks or share with folks. Bill could say things in AA meetings about his faith and about God nobody else could say and get by with it. Now, I don't say that facetiously or in jest. That was the truth, because Bill was respected and honored for that. And Bill and I happened to share the same faith. But Bill was wonderful at sharing that faith within the context of how we share about God as we understand God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was magnificent to me. And he lived out and demonstrated through the way he interacted with groups, with individuals, how do you live your faith in AA and try to share it with others. I think he's one of the best examples of anybody I've ever seen at that, and I try to follow in his footsteps in that same regard. And I'll always be grateful for him for demonstrating for me in his life how to do that. I loved him. He loved my wife, Marcy. He was always a wonderful, upbeat, fabulous guy. God bless you, Bill.
Thank you, John. Now I'd like to ask another good friend of mine to come up and share with us. Dick, you're on.
I'm Dick Skelly. I'm an alcoholic. At least I hope I'm an alcoholic. If I'm not, I've pissed away 36 years of my life coming to these damn meetings. Bill became my sponsor early in sobriety. He wasn't my first. My first sponsor was a fellow I met at Rebus, and he was sponsoring me for less than a year, probably 8 or 9 months, when he himself drank again, used again, went out, went away, and eventually died. And I met Bill because when I first got sober, I was living right in front of him. He lived in condos off of Highway 41 and Delk Road. And he and Tony Drake lived back in those condos. And I, at the moment, was living in a motel room right in front of those condos. I had been asked to leave the house. Apparently, I had lost my charm. And I was going to Rebus, and then I got invited by Tony Drake and Bill to right up the street from my alternate living quarters was a meeting at New Hope, and it was just a short distance away, so I drove up there, and Bill became my sponsor early in sobriety, and I told him about my first sponsor drinking, using, and dying, and he said, you know, that may be the best sponsor you ever had. He told me, don't do this, do this, do this, don't drink again, and if you do, you'll die. And he stopped doing this and this and this. He drank again and died. Best sponsor I ever had. Like, see what I mean? You know? And Bill became, if you were new in sobriety and Bill was your sponsor, he was a pain in the ass. He always, part of it was, Bill was not as smart as me. And I spent the early year of my sobriety educating Bill as to the true complexity of life. I had coached a soccer team to a state championship and was going to Florida for regionals. And I said, Bill, you know, the parents of this team, I've seen them, they're party people. We're going to get down there. There's going to be kegs of beer outside the hotel room. You know, how am I going to stay sober? And he said, you know, stupid stuff like, you know, well, don't drink. I said, no, Bill. I'm out of town and it's free. There have to be different rules for that. Another time I told him I was having trouble with honesty. He said, well, tell the truth. Damn. You should piss me off with stupid stuff like that. Yeah. And as time went by, he and Jen lived in another condo not far from my house, so I'd see them regularly in Cobb County. And then as time passed and they needed to be closer to friends and family, they moved to Gwinnett. And I stayed in touch with Bill and didn't see him as frequently. But he remained my sponsor, and I would speak with him on the phone a lot. And I told him it was something I had to sit down and talk with him about. And this was near the end of Jan's life. And despite her being reduced to almost, you know, infantile mentality, Bill would put her in a car, take her in a wheelchair, and bring her over to the mall because she liked to see the lights and hear the music. And I didn't know he was doing this, and he asked me to come speak with him at the mall. I said, okay. And I went over there, and I looked, and it was Jan in a chair in front of him. I said, you want to talk here? He says, yeah, don't worry. She won't tell anybody. So I did. And then as time went, a few years ago, Bill was, I happened to make my living as a lawyer, and Bill got in trouble. He used to invite people into his home to stay for a couple of days, and one fella came in and got hold of his credit information and ran up about $37,000 in charges against his account. And he gave me the paperwork. I said, let me see what I can do. And we got it worked out. He wound up owing virtually nothing, maybe $1,000 or $2,000 he lost. And later on, I was talking to him, and I said, Bill, you know, if I invited somebody into my house and they did something like that, you know, I'd have a resentment I might not get rid of. And he said, I said, how'd you handle it? He's like, I turned it over to you. And what the hell am I, a resentment dump? No. But that's the way it was, and he was that way. And most of it, I always remember, is just how gentle he was. And in honor of Bill, I had written this piece that might be helpful. It's called A World Less Gentle. When God grants a blessing and life is improved, we expect that the blessing will stay. It's a shock to the blessed when the blessing's removed. My world is less gentle today. At NABA, Gwinnett Room, and jail meetings too, age and nature were having their way, but I thought that our program would always have you. My world is less gentle today. Your eyes held a warmth neath a snow-covered roof. That white hair you always retained. those eyes flashed a smile of the soul shining through. Please make my world gentle again. I'm left here to trudge the road you once trod, aspiring to be more like you. Since you no longer need it, perhaps you'll ask God to grant me some gentleness too. We drunks like me can be raucous and loud and profane. You don't fit my pattern that way. Though I made you my sponsor, soft-spoken and tame, you were much too gentle to stay. My first thought was surely that God was mistaken. But these words speak of you and say, He's left us with much more of you than He's taken. You've made my world gentle today.
I'm Tom Walbert. I'm an alcoholic. We just take a break for a minute, and I'd like to see a show of hands of those people who Bill has told they're his favorites. I think the majority has it. I met Bill Roop down at the Rock about 2 or 3 months after I moved here. If you can imagine this guy in the chair here, sitting cross-legged on top of a chest of drawers, holding court with a group of people who are there. Now here's 8 guys in a room of bunk beds saying, oh my God, did I come here really? Just wondering why they're there. But he was having a blast. And so I wondered, I want to get to know this guy. So over that period of time, I did. What has impressed me about Bill is the way he lived his life. He taught me how to live a better life. He taught me how to get closer to God, and develop an understanding of God that I didn't have before. And I'll be eternally grateful for that. I think one of the funniest things I've ever seen was at the Ignatius House when Jan was still alive, and we had a full group of about 40 people. And in that 40 people was a young guy who was wet behind the ears in the program. He was also wet behind the ears at life in general. And you could see he'd been to sales training school because he had his index cards with exactly what he was going to say. So on Sunday morning, Bill had all of us in a room, and he went around and chose people within that group to tell us what they had learned that weekend or what they had gotten it. And Jan's over here sitting in a chair over here. I'm sitting there next to her. And so he calls on this young man, and he pulls out his index cards right on the sales training 101. And he starts talking. And Jan says out loud about 5 minutes, or not even 5 minutes, said, is he done yet? To which we all broke up. And about 2 minutes later, he was encouraged to go on. About 2 minutes later, Jan said, is he done yet? And all the time, Bill is trying to say, cool it, please, and that kind of thing. But it was just classic how Bill handled Jan and how Jan handled Bill. It's more like it. But I think, you know, what I learned from Bill over that period of time is by watching him and see how, a few of you have referred to that tonight, see how he handles other people and how he handles his life under the grace of God. He once told me one time, he said, you know, if you don't want to talk about Jesus, don't call on me. And so I didn't call on him. I was afraid of what he was going to say. But he taught me to be a lot more tolerant, a lot more loving. There's two things I've heard him say. Relax, God's in charge. He said that as recently as this Christmas dinner, this past Christmas. And I was talking to him one day on the phone. I'm not sure talking or belly aching is a better word, complaining. And he said, Tom, let me stop you for a minute. Let me ask you a simple question. Are you plugged into God, or are you plugged into Tom? And he said, "Don't answer me. That's a rhetorical question. Just when we hang up, let's find out." And a couple of years ago, when I was celebrating a birthday, I received in the mail a birthday card. And part of that, what was in there, was Bill's 33rd year chip. And I lost it. I'm going to lose it again real quick here. But the one thing Bill talked about in my relations with other people and coached me was to love people. Period. No question. Just love them. And you do your thing and they'll do theirs. But thank you so much.
Andy.
Hi, my name's Andy and I'm an alcoholic. I want to start by saying that I was not one of Bill's pigeons. I really never felt like I was good enough to be one of his pigeons, but I was real happy to be one of his crows. I had the honor and the privilege of knowing him and being exposed to him for the 6 years that I've been in this program. And I can tell you with absolute certainty a couple of things. Number one, I really was his favorite. And he told me. And number two, I have been fortunate enough to be in the presence of one of God's angels. Am I still on the top?
No, you're fine.
And I'll never be the same as a result of that. I had the honor and privilege the last 16 days he was with us. The hospice center that they put him in was about a half a mile from my house. So I got to spend a lot of time there just trying to give something back. Put ice chips in his mouth, get him water, help him straighten out his legs if he needed it. All through that time, he would just open his eyes and look over and say, "I love you." And that's so Bill. I watched the steady parade of AAs come marching through that place. And I think everybody that came had kind of the same thing on their mind that I did. It's like, what can I do for you? And I watched Bill turn that. And there he is doing for them. And sending everybody out of that hospice feeling better about themselves. And I'm just sitting there shaking my head, and right to the very end, this guy is still giving, because that's so much who he is. I'm going to miss him. And I just hope all of you will help remind me, and I'll try to do it with you too, that just love him. Just love him. Thank you.
I know this may be an improper time to inject this, but you know, we've heard all the wonderful, glowing things about my dear friend Bill Roop. And I want to take you back to 1971. When I first met Bill. And one of the things that was going on was they were going through a bit of a rough patch, he and Jan. Actually, some of us in the program were scared to death that we were going to get a call and somebody had stabbed the other person. And I know that he's now having a big laugh about that upstairs, because you know what it was? It is truth. You know, perfect he was not. And you know what? It made me feel better that I could be in his presence. And the reason I say that is because I wasn't perfect either. You know, I'm glad that the people in Alcoholics Anonymous were patient enough with me to allow me to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. because I made lots of mistakes in my sobriety. There's only one mistake that I did not make. I didn't pick up a drink by the grace of God. Gary Neidhart.
My name's Gary Neidhart. I'm not an alcoholic. Couple of things. One of which, in terms of the story that she was telling, Mary was telling about not knowing anything about sex, she left out one part of that. And that is, honestly, when you're around somebody, you can really pick up their sense of humor. So it's true. Bill said he doesn't know anything about sex. Okay? And then when Mary came to me, I said, well, I don't know anything about sex. See, the thing about Mary was she thought that was a setup. She thought we'd rehearsed it. No, That was just Bill Roop's sense of humor. And I was just playing right along with it. Okay, and but part of the message there, for me, is that he, in many regards, he's still with us. I mean, because we really did learn from him. And another thing, I got up and spoke at the memorial service, another vision I want you to have before. I happen to be German. I've got a German last name, and we can be prone to embellish and make things romantic. And so at the time that I was giving him, I was all set up at that very same church a couple Januaries ago to give him a 55-year chip. I don't know how many people he ever have the opportunity to do that for. Now, the podium means that he's beneath me. He's kind of looking up. Well, I'm at a microphone like this. He's not going to put up with that for a minute. And so what does he do? He leaves, and he goes, and he does one of his famous sit-on-the-floors like an Indian routine and brings the house down. Okay, and in many regards, that's the vision I had of him sitting in the middle of the floor, even when I was at the church, because he would always take things in a very lighthearted way. But you know, towards the end, he would talk about when he got up to tell his story, it was a love story. Okay, and he would talk about how with Jan's last 3 years when she was paralyzed and with Alzheimer's, he would say, you know, I love that woman more now today than I ever had. And I watched him, and it was true. Because after all, what was the example that he ended up setting for us? It's really very clear, and it works very well in when we go into jail meetings. And what the lesson is there really isn't happiness in the consumption of anything. What it really turns out to be is that we go through a transformation process, he did, where we are takers. And we come in and it's the all about me kind of stuff. And then we go through our whatever steps, 6, 7, change, however we do it. And then we have become givers. If you catch that picture over there, him, that is the essence of the man, is my opinion. That picture captures the spark in the eye. And that spark came through giving. And he gave to that woman, and he gave to her in a beautiful, beautiful way, which was such a privilege to watch. And I can remember so well, because there he is giving, and we brought over, there was a guitar. John Bowles was there. One of his pigeons brought a guitar, and the fellow banged on the guitar, and that brought Jan she was there in the room for a moment. And Bill realized it, and I can remember so well that how he reached out for her, and for that minute, for that moment of love, and then that quick she went back, get your hands off me! And that was exactly what it was. You know, how he went back, and a very gentle man, but he was hurt. He was a human too, but that still just that didn't slow him down. One of the only times I ever saw him really angry with himself was when he wasn't properly turning Jan in that hospital bed, and because that was early on when she was paralyzed, just because he didn't know any better, but he was a such a a good deed doer, and we're going to be finding out about his good deeds for time to come, because after all, also John Bowles brought in it was a couple of newspaper articles. Harry O'Brien was at the memorial service today. Harry O'Brien broke his neck, in case you didn't know that, back in 1983. And Bill Roop raised $33,000 for him as part of his rehabilitation. I didn't know that about that till today. You know, and a behind the scenes worker and somebody, but he was really so constant. And for me, how he was able to. When he really was plugging into God, he really could do that. Because after all, in January, I watched him pray with dying people. In 2004, there were five of them in a row. And really, when it comes right down to it, he's the man that taught me to pray. What a gift it was to be able to pray over him and be able to give back to him in the manner in which he gave to us. But he really, again, was just a marvelous teacher, and I think we're going to be talking about him for years to come, because he brought so much life into the fellowship, and we love talking about us, and the beautiful thing about us is we keep such people alive. Thanks.
Hey, Bud.
My name is Bud, and I'm an alcoholic. Being here and being asked or allowed to say something to this group is awesome. And it's humbling, but more importantly, it's inspiring. And it's Bill Roop, through you people, represent the legacy of AA. And I can think of no stronger legacy to perpetuate Bill Roop, and no statement that says it louder than you people and what you've shared about this man. I didn't know him that well, but he sponsored my sponsor. We didn't have that grand sponsor relationship, but we did have a relationship. And he was, as I say, inspiring. The truth, the simplicity of it, the directness of it, the honesty of it. And it's, as I say, inspiring. And I thank you people for being part of that legacy and that truth.
Helen, while she's making her way up here, she always complains about not being the one sober longest. And I said to her, in order to get there, what you have to do is you've got to stay sober and don't die.
I need all the help I can get. I'm an alcoholic named Helen Moore. And I got sober in Texas in 1964. And I moved here in 1965. And celebrated my first birthday here. I'm 48 years now. And I still got people ahead of me, you know. I just give up. One time, I don't know what we were having, a roundup or something. But anyway, Bill called me and he said he was going out of town to speak. And so I could probably win. And they brought in a ringer, a woman who had 51 years. And the next week he called me and he said, "Well, how'd it go?" And I said, "It didn't work." And I've just given up. But I haven't taken a drink and I haven't died yet. One of the things that Bill taught me was when I was first sober, I didn't have any resentments, of course, you know. I was about perfect, and that's not true. I was a mess. But I used to get real irritated going on the freeway when people would cut me off, you know, get in front of me right quick, and I'd have to slow down. And I said, it irritates me. And Bill said, all you have to do is say, God bless you. Now, that was a simple lesson, but I learned it. I did it. All I did was, when someone cuts me off, I say, God bless you. And he taught me a lot of things like that. We used to have talks at different places, at meetings and so forth. And he always had some example of what to do in a case of this, that, or the other. And I learned a lot of lessons. I've learned a lot of lessons in AA, but his were outstanding. My sponsor, Carol, the first woman that spoke this evening, and she paid me such a compliment one time. She said that I brought peace and serenity to her house. And that is such a great feeling. And I have thanks to Bill and people like that, even you, John. That have taught me whatever. You know, you have to accept a lot of stuff. Doesn't mean you have to approve of it, but you've got to accept it. And that's been a hard lesson to learn, but that's one of the first lessons that Bill taught me, was you have to accept it. It's just the way it is. You know, it is what it is. Anyway, it's been a great journey. And thanks to people like Bill, and especially Bill, I don't think we'll ever forget him. He'll just live with us forever. And that's such a great... I hope people can say the same thing about me when I finally pass, you know, which I don't hope's too soon. I want to make the international here. But if I don't, I don't. But anyway, I was telling Janie tonight on our way home, and I said, when we have my memorial, I want it to be short and sweet. And she said, put it in writing. And so I'll have to put it in writing. But Bill was unusual. He was different. And he had, someone mentioned about the faith he had in God. And that is so wonderful. It's so very seldom you see people like that, that he just would say, what would God do? What would God think about this? And you have to realize that a lot of times what we do or say, God wouldn't think much of us that way. But I loved him. I loved him dearly. And I remember when I was brand new to this program and new in Atlanta, that it was just wonderful that people like Bill and several other old-timers who really guided me along the way and made my AA journey great. Thank you.
Now, one of the things that I'd like to do now is I'm going to open the floor, because I know that there's people out there that would like to come up and say a few words. And I want you to know, if you just raise your hand, you can come on up. Come on, dear.
I'm Barbara Anderson. I'm a very grateful Al-Anon, and I won't take very long. My first memory of Bill was him admiring his own ice sculpture of his face. And John C. had carved him in ice for an event. And he was really enjoying that. I think that Bill was unconditional love, and I've heard a lot of people say that, and he truly shared that with me a lot. I know another example is, you know, Bill could be an outrageous flirt if you've been around him much, and He was afraid that he had offended my sponsor, Linda. And he sent her, she says she got a card from him every couple weeks for the last 2 years. And he even sent her gifts because he wanted to be sure he'd made amends. And she said it was just such a joy to get to know Bill. And she was never upset with him. So it was just that he was a very special man. I miss him a lot. And I do believe that he made the difference in Dick and I being married today. Thank you.
Floor is open. Notice the ladies coming up. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's kind of scary. Good evening, I'm Lynn. I'm an alcoholic. And it is an honor and a privilege to stand up here in the memory of. I was told about Bill and the Ignatius House, goodness, by Dick Bassett, probably about 17 or 18 years ago. And I thought that the retreat was just this, you know, hardcore, you know, Catholic, you know, really religious thing. I was like, no, not going. And several years later, I actually wound up going. And it was one of the biggest gifts, meeting Bill Roop. And for those of you who have talked about the true love and the learning how to just love them, that is one of the biggest messages that I learned from him. He, as I'm sure he had with many of you in here, you know, spoke with me one-on-one about some personal issues. And when my dad was killed unexpectedly, you know, there was a lot of anger. There was a lot of anger because it was by a young person. And, you know, I had 16 years sober, and I didn't think I could live through that because my dad preceded me in this program. And Bill pulled me aside. And I got to talk to him several times, and he taught me about forgiveness, and he taught me about how to love and how to put myself in the shoes of that young person, and walked me through that loss. And I will never, ever forget that. That's a gift that you cannot repay, being able to find that. And then just one quick story about the opportunity, Andy. Andy and I got to spend some precious, precious time with Bill in hospice. By God's grace, I had this amazing work schedule just open up, and I was able to go there for several days in a row and just spend quality time and try and give back in any way that I could. And there was one moment when we walked back into the room, and some people call this the ramblings of a man on his deathbed. You know, who's in and out. I called it a message from God and a testament to who Bill was and a testament to this program. He looked at us and he said, "Have you heard the latest plan?" And I said, "No, Bill, what's the latest plan?" He goes, "I got a plan." I'm like, "Okay." And he said, I was supposed to be gone long before now. I'm not supposed to be here. I said, I know that. I said, "So what's the plan?" And he said, "Well, since God doesn't want me yet, I'm obviously not dying yet," he said, "I'm not going to sit here and die. I'm going to get out there, and we're going to do some more work." I said, "Okay." And he said, "So I'm going to eat, and I'm going to get strong again, and we're going to get back out there and carry this message, and we're going to love him, and we're going to do the deal." I said, "Okay." And he said, "Will you help me?" I said, "Absolutely." And, you know, knowing the medical field the way I do, I know scientifically what that was for me through this program, and knowing the man that Bill was, that is a testament to a man wanting to do the deal and doing God's will even in the last moments. And I hope and pray that I never forget those last moments with him, and never ever forget the message of love and forgiveness he gave me. So thank you, Bill. I love you.
I'm Sally, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'm so glad we're all here tonight. It seems surreal at sitting at his memorial in that beautiful church, and sitting here tonight. It's like I'm kind of like stepping out of everything, going, "Oh my God, we're talking about Bill Roop, and he's gone. But I just wanted to share with you that, forgive me for the people who've had to hear this for the last 2.5 months, 20 times, John Bowles and Amy, sorry, but here it goes again. I met Bill 6 years ago, and I might say that I fell in love with Bill 6 years ago. And I know that you can say that without romance involved. I fell in love with my son, too, you know, and just like that. I was supposed to go to another meeting, and my father had passed away 3 years prior to that. He was a professor at Oglethorpe University, and Roop was given telling his story at Oglethorpe Church right across the way. And I was supposed to go to some other meeting, and I got lost or ran out of time, and I was like, oh, I'll just go over to Skyland. I know they have a Tuesday night speaker meeting. And it was a packed house, and I was like, who's this guy, you know, and Bill Roop. And I had been in the program for, yes, John, 14 years then. some people said I wasn't acting like it. But anyways, it's all right. Bill helped with that, too. He started talking. I was sitting in the front row, and I couldn't believe it. He looked like my father. He talked like my father. He had the same wiry build as my father. You know, my father would talk about fights and go like that, like Bill used to do when he was describing, you know. He had the same mannerisms, same dark humor, you know, sarcastic humor, loving humor. And then one of my father's favorite jokes was the head joke. And when Bill got to the end of his story and told the head joke, I'm like bawling. And everyone's cracking up, and he's like, are you okay? You know, and I said, what meetings do you go to? Where do you live? What do you do? And I mean, whether he likes it or not, and those around him, I've just followed him. I've followed him for the last 6 years, you know, and what a gift. Just a quick funny story. I was pregnant, and I was going down with him and another guy, Tom. We were riding in the car, and we were sitting at dinner, and I my boobs had gotten bigger. You know, I was pregnant, and I was irritable and all of the rest. And we were eating, and we were in some little town, and I was like, oh, my God, he's going to mention my boobs. I know it. He's going to mention my boobs. And I was like, he better not, because my dad would do the same thing. It's not creepy, you guys. It was just, you know, like, Jesus, look at those. But But Bill goes, we were eating, he goes, my God, your boobs are getting big. And I was like, Bill, I was like, really? Really? Now's not the time. So, when I first told him I was pregnant, we were walking into Chick-fil-A, and I go, come here, I got to tell you something. Don't tell anybody, don't tell anybody. And he goes, you're pregnant. And I was like, yes. And he goes, it's the second known case of immaculate conception. What a miracle! So, you know, we don't have time, and the stories just go on and on. And he was my sober father. My father was very successful. He loved people. He loved teaching, but he never had the opportunity to get sober. And, you know, it's of course all about me, but here comes Bill Roop, and God presented me with the opportunity to have a sober father. I will miss him for the rest of my life, and I will love him always. And I don't know, I still have the grieving period, but I just am, I'll just look to you guys, and I think the joy is what John Bowles was talking about earlier at the memorial, is that I have to remember, you know, Bill Wilson talked about faulty dependency on human beings, and I have to remember where the love comes from, you know, that I will grieve Bill Roop the man, you know, the man with the white hair and the jokes, but his spirit will live on forever. And last thing, I was traveling to Kentucky one time, and he would call me at the most opportune times when I'm getting ready to have a meltdown, which is often, you know, dramatic. But I was on top of this mountain, and there's never any cell phone range, nothing. You go over the hills into Tennessee and Kentucky, and I'm there, and the phone rings. And he goes, it's Roop. And I was like, of course it's Roop. Only Roop could call me from the top of a mountain. So, God bless you, Roop. The day he died, he gave me a kiss, you know, and I'll remember that kiss. It's the way my son kisses me, because he had gotten too weak to do the full on, you know, but it was the spirit of love. And I've never experienced before, when someone died, I've never experienced the sense that they were happy. You know, I got the sense that they were free or they were joyful or they were home. But yesterday I had the overwhelming sense that he's truly happy. He's truly happy. And for that, I'm happy for him. And, you know, I hope we all may be a little closer because of his love. Thank you so much. Thank you.
My name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic. Some years ago, I came to this clubhouse, and after the meeting, Bill came up to me, and he talked to me. We struck up a conversation. Somehow, I told him I was from Chicago. He said, well, I'm from Chicago, too. He said he went to Yale Grammar School. I went to Yale Grammar School. He graduated from that grammar school on the south side of Chicago before I was born. And we got a relationship going on, and every time I go to Chicago, I call him. I went last year. He said, Mark, take a picture of that school and bring it back down to me. And I did. It was amazing to know him. I always love him. He always tell me, I can tell everybody else, I'm one of his favorites. And that I'm one of King Kids. But he told me something real special a couple of weeks before I saw him, last time I saw him. He said, you know, Mark, I wish you have a happy ending. And so I wish you do too, Bill. Love you, man. With that, I miss my buddy, and he's still with me. He gave me a lot of jewels I will always cherish and pass on. Thanks for letting me share.
It's okay. We'll wait for you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Thomas. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to see all of my real good friends that I've known over the years. I was telling people earlier today. It was at dinner, and then a few people at Bill's service today. One of my favorite people too is John back there. You know, I had a chance to meet Bill years ago at the Marietta Roundup, and it was at the Cobb County Civic Center. And then I had a chance to meet him again when it was at the hotel over there on Delk Road. You remember that, Dick? And, but you know, he always told me, when I tell him, well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be there or not. He says, well, if you ain't going to be there, I ain't going to be there. I said, what? I said, well, you're expected to be there. He said, no, I'm not. And, but, you know, he always, like everybody says, he always had that smile on him. And he would tell me, come up to me, he says, you sober today? Yeah. He goes, me too. And I'll never forget, we was eating lunch, and that was at the Double Tree, where it's at now. We ran around up, and he come up to me, he says, what you gonna do today? Well, I don't know. He said, I asked him, what you want me to do today? He says, I want you to get up. He said, I want you to get out there, shake some hands, and meet some people. And I said, okay. So I got out there and I was meeting people. He came up to me and says, now look, that ain't the way to do it. I said, well, what else do you want me to do? And he goes, I want you to walk up to him, shake the hand, and then give him a hug and says, I love you. And So it's like, okay. So anyway, I still do that today. I meet people, I greet people. And today, he will always be in my heart. He would always be here in spirit. And I was just thinking a while ago that I will have that chance to work with him again in the roundups to come, because he will be here in spirit and he will be here in my heart. Thank you.
Come on, Isla.
Thank you. My name is Isla and I'm an alcoholic. I am so privileged to have known this beautiful man since 1975 and to listen to him, and still as recently as today, still learning from him. And when you just mentioned the roundup, I was thinking how funny it was. Bill, a couple of years ago, Bill was selling tickets to a roundup, and I said, Bill, I'm not going to be here on that day. He said, oh, darling, we don't care if you come or not. Just buy a ticket. Bill, he could always get away with these things that other people just could not. And the giving, I have never known anybody more magnanimous than Bill Roop. When he decided to move to Gwinnett County to be closer to his family, I was in real estate at that time, and Bill had been in sales, and he just came up to me and said, you want to sell us a house? And I said, yeah. And I wasn't the listing agent, so I represented him as his buyer's agent. And, you know, this was before Jan got sick. And they were like a comedy team. I never laughed so much in my entire life as I did. We'd go to lunch and drive around and do the inspection, all that stuff. What a privilege. And I was just thinking, as everybody's been sharing about being his favorite, he never told me that. So my interpretation of that is, he never had to. It went without saying. What a wonderful, wonderful gift this man was. And the only question he asked me, you know, sometimes, as anybody in sales knows, sometimes, you know, the people just drive you crazy. And the only question Mr. Roop ever asked me was, I was getting ready to go to Chicago to visit my son and my grandchildren. It was right before Christmas. And the only thing Bill said to me was, feels good to be leaving town with a sale under your belt, doesn't it? What a wonderful, wonderful giving man. As recently as this afternoon, Tim was kind enough to give me a ride up to the memorial service, and people talking about the feelings of abandonment. I mean, that Bill, he made us all, whether or not he said it, he always made me feel like I was the most special person in the room. And that is a gift. That is a gift from God that he possessed. And always talking about being, are you plugged into yourself or are you plugged into God? That was a favorite. And I was acutely aware of how just within the past week, by my selfishness and being plugged into myself and not God, I had probably made somebody feel very abandoned. And just talking about Bill Roop, new realizations. He will live forever in our hearts and in our lives. And that was a beautiful, beautiful poem, Dick. Thank you.
Uh,
I think we're going to have to shut it down. But before we do, I want you to know that we're going to pass the basket. And the reason we're going to pass the basket is to repay our building here the privilege of us having this memorial service here. So if you'll be kind enough to help somebody help him pass out those baskets, I want to thank all of you for allowing me to moderate this memorial service. I know that Bill will be deeply missed by a lot of people, but I can assure you of this: no one could take his place. So I hope that what we can take away from here is, I remember one of the things that I would hear him say time and time again. He'd say, "Have you had a drink today?" "No." "Well, you're a winner." He said that over and over again. And you know, I feel that I'm a much better man for having Bill Rube in my life, because he was a great, great guy. And those shoes will not be filled by any other person, because he's a very special man. When I think of Bill and Dr. Bob, I can think about Bill Rube. He was really in the image of our co-founders. Now, I have a way of closing this meeting tonight after we have a little reading. We're going to close it in our normal manner, but I'm going to ask my friend to come up and share with us.
I'm Tim, I'm an alcoholic. And I'll be reading The Promises, great honor. I know many of you in this room, a lot of you have told your stories in this room on Monday night. I'm a newcomer and a slow learner and a quick study. And I tell you, when I first got here, I was all shot out. And Gary and Bill came to a bridge builder meeting. And boy, these guys really inspired me. And I had the opportunity to, because I worked in the evening, to go to some of those noon meetings around town at the Gwinnett Room and Knott's Landing. And I remember the first time he asked me to lunch, I was like, wow. I couldn't believe I was going to be at the lunch table with his pigeons, because I was his sick puppy. And he told me, he said, "Listen, I don't ever have to invite you to lunch again. You just know that you're welcome." That meant a lot to me. And so that was part of the promises. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, they will always materialize if we work for them.
In closing this meeting in our normal manner, would we be kind enough to join hands in the Lord's Prayer? Whose Father?
Our Father, who art in heaven. First I slipped and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me and finally waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Where the promises are in. And I always long for something that set me free. Take me where